Hello and welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, JP John Paz. Of course, with me, the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion. He is, of course, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, JP. Doing great. Getting ready to go to Los Angeles to do the new thing that Device is doing about the territory. So I did the Florida one, now doing the Honolulu one.
Very, very cool. Obviously, they're doing different stuff from Dark Side of the Ring, really focusing on some positive stuff, some good stuff in the good old days of the territories, right?
Right, right.
So who's going to be joining you out there?
Eliza Anderson, Curtis Iaquia's son, Rocky, Superfly Tui, and one other person. I'm not sure where it is yet.
Was Rocky a wrestler?
Yeah, Rocky was. He worked Florida, he worked Vancouver, Portland, Hawaii, Japan, Australia, New Zealand. He worked that part of the world a lot.
How come he never made it to Hong Kong? Oh, wow. How come he never made it to WCW like his brother?
He came. Rocky is Ikea. And he made it to WCW for a while. But he had a business in Honolulu. He did very well with it.
What do you think of just that territory in general, like money-wise? Was it like a big money generator?
Yeah, when I got there, they were only running once every like 2 to 3 weeks, one town. But all of a sudden, it became like everybody started helping Leah. And it was the only place in the country that I know of that NWA and WWF guys could work with one another. Me and Mark worked with Don Morocco and Fuji a few times. And then we had Brody, we had Hanson, we had Baba, we had Inoki, we had the Sheik, I believe Sabu. We had a lot of good times. Flair came in, Andre came in. Me and Mark worked with Andre and Mosca at the big stadium show. So they did quite a turnaround. Then they started to travel all the islands, and then they went to Samoa and Malaysia and Hong Kong, and yeah, they did very well for a while.
Was that just like the territory that people would use kind of on their way to Japan a lot of the times?
And coming back.
So a lot of, like, good business was like, okay, if Brody and Hanson are going to Japan, we'll take them on the way there, we'll take them on the way back.
Right. And everybody wanted to make the pilgrimage to see King Curtis. You know, Curtis at one time was the most beloved person in the wrestling business. Everybody wanted to hang with Curtis.
What was it about him that everybody loved him?
He had the best Molly Wally in the world. But he was a great talker, great storyteller. And he had a business on the beach. The guys would go boogie boarding, talk to him. It was great.
Pretty cool, I think, about that area and yeah, just that territory. So, I mean, that's, you don't hear a lot about it.
Yeah, we had the Road Warriors also, Kurt Hennig, Nick Bockwinkle, Ray Stevens, a lot of guys.
So as far as, like, Dark Side, I know you did Florida? Not Dark Side, excuse me, the territories with Vice, but you did Florida. And this, did you do any other ones that we missed? Because it seems like you're all over the place with them, helping them out.
This is the second one I've done with them. So hopefully I'll do another one or two.
And I know Dutch did the one with Memphis, with the two Jerrys. Yeah.
Yes.
pretty good. I think they may be getting away from the dark side stuff and maybe focusing on some more of the positive stuff in the business and, you know, focus on the good old days.
Yeah, I think so. And it's good because there's not many guys left that work territories, I don't believe. Do you?
Oh, no, definitely not. Slowly but surely, definitely not.
When I started the business, there was 37 territories.
Wow. Crazy to think, yeah. Like, how that all washed up in, you know, a matter of years.
Right. Quickly.
So as far as the topic at hand today, I want to go back to WCW in 1999, quite a turbulent year. WCW Great American Bash in 1999, which was held on June 13th, Baltimore, Maryland, at the Baltimore Arena. The attendance, 11,672. The pay-per-view buys, 185K. The tagline, the real fireworks start June 13th. Where were you at this point? Or were you like the assistant booker to Nash? Was Nash the head booker here in 1999?
I believe Nash was the head booker, wasn't he? Had Russo come in yet?
Not yet, nope.
Yeah, no. So Nash was still the booker.
Again, though, you're just basically assistant booker, helping him, putting stuff together, agenting, producing, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. And you had Mike Graham, Bob Mole. And that was about it, I believe.
When I talked to Bob Old a few weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, just this time and, you know, putting everything together. I didn't realize, you know, he was very integral, like, you know, timing the matches and doing things. Is that a hard thing to do as far as, like, being able to time the matches and stuff? Because he's not really in the business, per se. I mean, he's in it, but he wasn't, like, a wrestler. I mean, does it take something different to be able to kind of time the matches and be a big part of that part of the show?
Absolutely. Bob was a math wizard. And you got to be very on top of matches running long, matches running short. Bob could make up quite a bit of difference. He was very good. And he had good ideas, too.
What do you have to do for that? Do you have to be like, okay, hardcore hack is wrestling Brian Knobbs and it's going to go, you know, 5 minutes. Oh, they went over by 60 seconds. I mean, is that what you're kind of doing when you're timing the matches?
Yeah. And then you'd have to, then I'd say to Bob, well, or Kevin would say to Bob, well, we've only over a minute. Let's see how we are 2 matches from now. And then if we had fallen behind, we'd have to spend time. That was a very intricate part.
I'm always curious about that. So because not a lot of people talk about that, like the actual timing of the matches, because we'll be like, oh, wow, that pay-per-view went over. Like, for instance, AEW a few weeks ago, like, went way over the time. It was like a half hour over. I'm always just curious. I know they had more leeway because it's Bleacher Report pay-per-view. It's not your standard pay-per-view, so you can kind of go over. But I was always interested in that part of it because it's like, wow, who was like really focusing? So Bob at one point and Jody Hamilton before that, right?
Right, and Jody did a great job also.
Would you ever time it? Or you don't like that end of it?
No, I would time it earlier and give it to Bob or Jody. And, you know, Kevin would tell me the times and I would time it out. But when you doing other things, you need a guy anchored in that position, and Bob was perfect for it. Jody was too.
So at this point, 99, Bischoff is still there, but there's a bit of a rocky road with him. Where's his head at in 99? Because obviously he would leave a few months later in September. Harvey Schiller and the crew up north would send him home. I know everyone says he got fired, but he was still under contract, still getting paid. So technically he was just sent home. What was his head like at this point? He seemed like not happy.
I think that Eric had done such a magnificent job that after a while, the burnout factor for anybody doing that is impossible not to burn out. And Eric did a hell of a job, but, you know, he was wearing so many hats and running here, running there, putting fires out, calling Brady Zedlow off Gary Juster or different promoters, and then call the publicity department, dealing with the North Tower. I mean, Eric's plate was jam-packed, overflowing. So he did a remarkable job not burning out earlier. And he didn't really burn out. I think he was just exhausted.
Is it almost too much going on? Like, as far as like, okay, you got to deal with the North Tower, then politics, and then, you know, maybe changing Booker. Nash is going to be the Booker, but he's one of the boys. It's just too much going on for him?
I don't think it was too much going on because he was very successful doing it. But, you know, there's no downtime. You know, he's in that office from the time, from early morning to early night, then going to catching a plane, flying to towns. You know, he's watching, handling contracts. He's there to watch the show and see what's working, and people are coming up to him. Hey, can I have 2 minutes? You know, 20 guys come up to you, that's 40 minutes, and you're supposed to be watching the show. Very difficult. But Eric was very hands-on, and I admire Eric Bischoff very much, that he could control, keep all those plates spinning in the air at the same time. I don't think anybody but Vince McMahon could have done what he did.
Funny, online, Eric Bischoff and CM Punk were having a lot of back and forth, and then Tony Khan was getting involved, and Bischoff was basically saying, oh, Punk was a flop financially, and, you know, really kind of ripping into AEW. But I think you got to also keep in mind he has a podcast. Controversy creates cash is something that is a big motto for him. So, like, him stirring it up, they even asked Punk after he won the title at the pay-per-view, then Tony Khan stepped in, and he had more to say. I mean, do you think that's Bischoff just stirring the pot, or does he really kind of, you know, really not happy with AEW and where they're at? Because, you know, a lot of comparisons to AEW and WCW.
I think, you know, people taking shots at your baby, meaning WCW, that was Eric's baby. And the other thing, I think you answered it. Eric has a podcast. His mantra is controversy causes cash, creates cash. So I think there was a little bit of that. And, you know, you're going to get more, and this is no disrespect to anybody, but you're going to get more clicks when you're being controversial with a top guy than you would with the guys who will say, and this is no disrespect, but for guys that are just starting, you know what I mean, like Danhausen or somebody like that. You think I'm right?
For sure. You got to go after the big dog, the guy making $3 million a year. You know what I mean? Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, yeah. And you're going to get more hits, you know what I mean? And Eric's very good at his job. So I think, you know, he has an opinion, but I think it's magnified because he has a podcast. It's very, very successful.
Yes, very, very successful for sure. With Punk, though, I don't think, you know, maybe Khan is kind of taking it differently or maybe the wrong way, but he's saying he's a flop. I think Bischoff is comparing him to WCW and Hogan because that's who Punk initially compared himself to. Remember what he said? They're Hogan, him, Adam Cole, and Danielson are Hall, Nash, and Hogan. So, yeah, I think Bischoff kind of has taken a little bit of that and kind of thrown in there. Khan is saying, oh, compared to where we were, we're doing much better business and better pay-per-view buys and I guess maybe a little bit of stronger ratings with Punk. But comparing to WCW, it's like, you know, nothing almost. You know, it's like a pimple, basically.
Well, I saw that interview, and I saw Punk smiling. I think he's in on their joke. You know what I mean?
Maybe. Because he didn't really say anything, yeah.
No, I think he's in on a joke, and he understands that he's on the top of the heap. So, of course, people are going to want to either praise him or knock him because of it drives numbers.
Tony was a little wound up too.
Yeah. And the other thing is that Punk has moved the needle, in my opinion. And whether people bring up that he didn't do good in UFC, besides Brock and Batista, who else crossed over? He has a set of balls on him that he walked over and tried something that he wanted to try. And I recommend him that it was a great move for him. I don't care if he lost. I don't see a lot of guys getting in the UFC and getting paid what he did. First match they ever had. So maybe if he trained a little bit more before he had the first match, he would have had a better showing. But I think, you know, my hats are off to a guy to try that. That's all. I don't see a lot of guys trying that.
I think it's hard to say, you know, compared to the WCW and the, you know, obviously never should compare yourself to Hogan, Hall, and Nash. I mean, that's just blasphemy and crazy. Those are like, you know, legit game changers, larger than life, some of the biggest stars ever. But in context to today's wrestling, Punk has done pretty damn good. I mean, 20,000 people in Chicago, 200,000 people for the buy rate. So, I mean, considerably, I mean, he's done pretty damn good for them, consider where they're at and where he's at with them.
Well, let's put it this way. You think they would have done 20,000 in Chicago without Punk?
Not a chance.
Do you think they would have done 200,000 buy rates without Punk?
Nope, because they were only doing 100.
Yeah, I don't. So controversy creates cash. And
definitely.
Like I said, I think Punk was in on the joke. He was smiling the whole time. And then he had to put his hand on Tony and say, hey, let's go on to something else, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Tony gets a little wacky.
But he's rightfully, too. He's protecting his guys, and I admire that. He didn't just sit there and let it roll off and no response. I actually liked his response. He showed loyalty to his guy. That's created a successful buy rate and selling out arenas. I don't think anybody else did a 200,000 buy rate for them, did they?
No, nope.
So to say that Punk didn't move the needle, I think is just a clickbait move. And it's good. It's good. It creates a buzz in the business.
What do you think about him winning the world title, the AEW world title?
What would you do? Put him over, put the kid over? Now, let's think about this business-wise. I think Hangman Page is terrific. He's going to be one of the biggest stars in the history of the wrestling business. Now you got to look at business. Is it going to hurt Paige to lose to Punk? One of the hottest commodities in the history of the wrestling business. You guys just gave you 200,000 buy rate. Selling our arenas where we said they hadn't done that before him. Do you think the people that bought that pay-per-view and the people that came to the show would have been happy with any other finish?
Probably not.
I think that if he didn't win, the buy rate would be down. Then he's going to go and get in line to chase him again. I think that Tony did the right thing. I know I'm going to get blasted about it. Punk is a game changer, and Hangman's going to be the next big deal. Sometimes, I'll give you an example. When Flair was after the title, first time, he didn't win the first time out. You remember the big angle with Orton and Slater?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Holly Race put up a $25,000 bounty. It doesn't seem much in today's day, but... And then when it was right for Rick to win, he won in his backyard against the world champion. Paige's day is going to come. And I think because the match was so good that Paige now can start beating people up and fighting from the bottom and just talking about he can talk about everybody in there that he's going to wrestle, but as long as Punk is champion, people are going to want to see that return, especially if they handle Paige right, and I think they're going to. I think the kid is going to be a huge, huge star, but maybe that day they would have got some flack. So I'm sure that as smart as Tony is analytically and business-wise, let's face it, he runs the Jaguars, right?
Mm-hmm.
He runs a soccer team or a league, right? He's very analytical. I'm sure that this wasn't one of those things, well, what are we going to do? I think he had it all in front of him. And when they knew what the buy rate was going to exceed, they said, well, we got to go with the guy that's got us here to the dance. And then this is not belittling Paige at all, because I think he's going to win the belt and probably from Punk. But what a series of matches they'll have. That would be like Sting and Flair. You know, when I was stuck, all I had to do was put Sting and Flair together, and I knew I got a house or a pay-per-view buy. They can bring it back, and they will handle Paige in the right way. And he's the future right now. Punk is the present. And that's not diminishing anything that Hangman has done. But on your biggest pay-per-view, title switch is the right thing to do, especially when it's across the corner. That's just my observation.
Do you think they almost waited too long to put the title on Punk?
They drew 200,000 people, right?
Well, for his debut pay-per-view, the numbers aren't officially out for this one yet, so I'm not sure. The rumor is it's somewhere around 170 for this one. That was the rumor.
That's still a great pay-per-view buy in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
Timing is everything in the business, and maybe they did wait a little too long, but they were very successful with this, and I think they'll springboard off of this. And they have that return match in their back pocket when they need it. Because if Paige wins the next one, now you got Ali and Frazier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Waiting for the Thriller in Manila, right? The third one. Wasn't that the third one?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're waiting for the third one, you know. And the third one will be huge.
So back in 1999, the big star, you know, we're talking about CM Punk. The big star then was Hulk, but he's gone. He's filming some stuff. So you guys go back to the Macho Man well, and he becomes like the top guy again. I know Nash is technically the champion, but Savage comes in. And he's, you know, the big star and the big gun. He obviously looks a lot bigger. He really came back Spring Stampede 1999. I remember he was the referee in that four-way match where DDP won the World Heavyweight title. DDP kind of owed him one because he helped him win the title that day. What do you think about Savage and his growth, if you will? I mean, he looks gigantic. He's bigger than ever here.
I used to go to Tampa when I was in Tampa and train with Macho. And I hadn't seen him in a long time. I was meeting him on the causeway. And he had his back towards me. And he had a hat on. And I didn't even recognize him. He was so big.
Wow. Too big, you think?
I don't know. I mean, that was a different time, different era. You know what I mean? I thought about that today. And so I was watching some of the pay-per-view. And I noticed that, you know, the gigantic guys are almost gone from the business, aren't they?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Almost all of them, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that era was a different era. And, you know, Randy and I used to ever say, what's too much? So I think Randy, you know, he had OCD. If he was going to train, he was going to train 6 hours a day. He was going to do whatever he had to do to make it work for him. So it worked for him. He got a movie part in a big-time movie. He was big. Let's put it that way. He was huge.
Yeah, that role in Spider-Man was great, too. Maybe, like, the best cameo for a wrestler in the movie. That was so great.
Yes, it was.
And for a while, it was the number one movie, like, of all time. So, I mean, it made so much money. It was just ridiculous, but it's great to be a part of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It exposed Randy to a different clientele than just wrestling. And I thought it was great for Randy. Randy was one of my favorite people.
Did you like Bonesaw McGraw?
Yeah, I loved it.
Great character, perfect. And obviously, if everybody knows the story, obviously Spider-Man at one time was doing wrestling for money, and Savage ends up being like the big villain that he needs to be to collect on some money because he's having some financial problems. Really good stuff.
Yeah. Very good.
Do you think that he was taking a lot of steroids at this point? I know obviously you have to work out a lot, but do you think he was on the gas?
Well, I've never seen anybody that big that quick. I don't personally know for a fact, but I was going to bet. I think I bet, yeah.
So Savage comes back, but he's not alone. He's going to create his own little Team Madness with Medusa, Molly Holly, who is known as Miss Madness, of course, and the gorgeous one, Gorgeous George. Did you like, you know, having him with these three blondes, obviously mainly with Gorgeous George, who's his girlfriend, a lot younger, but did you like this look and this different character for Macho Man, almost like this you know, this big jacked up pimp?
I did like it because it fit Randy. And everything that Randy touched became successful. So.
Did you?
I think people, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, do you think, like, the people were into Macho Man just because it's, like, it's still Macho Man, but it's, like, it's a different look for him? I know he changes looks a lot, but it was just a completely different look for him.
I think it was a great change. Randy was ahead of the curve.
With Gorgeous George, was she good backstage, bad backstage? Was she a problem? Did she want to be on TV? Was she, you know, not starstruck, but was she kind of just going around with all the stars? Like, how was she backstage?
Very easy to get along with. Very easy to get along with. She knew her place. She was a supporting cast member for Randy. It never caused a problem.
Did she want to be on TV, or did he want her to be on TV?
I think it was a little bit of both, but I think Randy wanted her to be on TV.
To be honest, it makes him look good because, you know, you got this gorgeous blonde who's probably 21 at this point. You know what I mean? And he's, you know, in his mid-40s, and he's hanging, like, just, it makes him look like, wow, look at Macho Man, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Remember, he started out with Liz, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
Who was the All-American girl?
With Macho Man at this point, I know Hogan's taking some time off. Obviously, you know, he's going to be filming some stuff and some movies and some different TV stuff. Like, is it imperative to get Macho Man back here? Like, do you feel like you need the anchor, the big star, the huge draw outside of, you know, Nash and Sting and stuff? But do you feel like you need, like, that the mega star?
I think Randy, Hogan's 1A, Randy's 1B. Randy doesn't get his just dues. Randy was fabulous. Maybe had the greatest match of all times. Great performer, great talker. You're not going to lose much with Randy Savage.
With the Macho Man and Nash feud, do you like the outside, the extracurricular stuff for the feud? Like, remember, and if you go back in the archives, we have a whole episode dedicated to it, so we won't go too into it now, but like the White Hummer thing, like that starts coming back to me. Do you like all that other stuff that gets added to the feud?
I know what they're trying to do, but sometimes we overdo things. And it came in my head, maybe to the line, but they didn't cross it. Because they've gotten away without it, yeah. Did it help? Well, they drew, so I'm not going to say they didn't help.
And then remember they had the contortionist? She was in the bag and dumping stuff on the guys, yeah.
Donna, she's a very nice lady. Her son just graduated from the Annapolis Academy. Very nice woman.
Oh, you still keep in touch with her. Well, nice.
Yeah. She actually runs some conventions. I actually worked for her a couple of times.
Did you like, though, that part of the storyline? To me, I'm like, it's so corny and cheesy and, like, I don't know, like, not WCW-like. You know what I mean? It's almost like a WWF-like cornball thing to do with the contortionist and the bag and coming out of the bag and pouring stuff on the head.
Okay. Where did Nash and Randy make their mark?
WWF.
I think they're trying to add a little WWF this week.
Did you like it, though? Did you like that stuff?
I thought she did a good job in the bag. Sometimes you got to be careful that you're not just bitching about something that you don't like. I happen to like coffee ice cream, and I don't like coffee and chocolate ice cream mix. So it's a preference, and I think they had the wherewithal to do something different. My opinion, too much, but again, the proof is the numbers they drew.
But here it's like, okay, they're putting I don't even know what it would, sludge, I guess, or whatever you want to say. They're pouring stuff on each other. They're destroying each other's cars. You know, they're doing all this, like, other stuff that didn't really get me interested in the pay-per-view. Maybe that's worked elsewhere for other people, but to me, it just didn't work for me as far as getting into that match and getting into the pay-per-view.
Again, that was your case, right? My case
yep.
was similar, but some people must have liked it. And I'm not going to doubt Randy and Kevin didn't have the best interests for the company. I think they thought maybe they needed to add a little bit more to it rather than just violence.
So Mike Tenay, Tony Schiavone, and Bobby the Brain Heenan are on the call. We always talk about we like that trio, Tenay, Schiavone, and Heenan together.
I love it. Absolutely love it.
So before the show starts, Master P and the No Limit Soldiers are shown walking into the building. Who is responsible for bringing in Master P and the No Limit Soldiers? Is that a Turner thing? I mean, who's bringing them in?
It had to be okay by Turner, but I think Kevin had met them before. So it had to be okayed by Turner to do it.
When you think about it, do you think that, you know, this guy, obviously he's very famous at this point, a huge star, but do you think he fits in WCW with the No Limit Soldiers? Do you think that was good to get that mix of pop culture in there for WCW?
Well, his posse got busted at the airport trying to go through with guns. So, no, I don't think it did WCW any good.
No, definitely not. One good thing that kind of, to me, came out of it, because I thought it was funny, is like, okay, you got the No Limit Soldiers, but then you got the West Texas Rednecks, and Kurt Hennig meets the No Limit Soldiers as they're walking into the building, and Kurt Hennig tells them that he's Bowdy Bowdy. So, funny stuff, though. You know, he's hilarious.
Kurt was one of a kind. One of a kind.
Master P ends up signing a copy of his album for Hennig, you know, because Hennig says he's a fan. So, of course, what does Perfect do? He destroys the album. Just funny stuff from him, to make fun of the No Limit Soldier. I really kind of enjoyed that part of it. I just always thought, like, okay, that's really funny because these guys, very popular pop culture, the West Texas Rednecks come along and just tear apart everything that they're about.
Yeah, and that was the feeling, I think, in America at the time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Two opposite ends.
Yeah.
Rapping country.
Who came up with the West Texas Rednecks?
I think Penny.
Seems like he was having a lot of fun with it. You know what I mean? Just even that little brief inner exchange or whatever you want to say with Master P, seems like he was having a lot of fun with it.
I think so, too. I think so. Kurt could do anything and get it over.
Did you enjoy the music for the West Texas Rednecks?
You're screeching, you mean? Sounds like a bunch of cats crying.
Remember Rap is Crap?
Yeah. My favorite. I think it went to number one in the Billboard charts in the country, right?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
So let's kick off the pay-per-view. The first match, Hack, a.k.a. Sandman, with Chastity, defeats Brian Knobbs with Jimmy Hart. And basically a hardcore match in 6 minutes. I think they called it a kendo stick match, but it's basically a hardcore match. What do you think of just about Hack here in WCW?
I love Hack. I love Hack. I was glad we got him.
Is that you bringing him in?
What?
Did you bring him in?
No, I think Kevin brought him in. I think I might have, when Kevin said, what do you think? I think I would have said yes. I mean, Hack still draws today. I was at a signing in Brooklyn just not too long ago for Outlaw Wrestling. Great promoter there. Great promoter. And I didn't know that Hack was in the building. He had snuck in and he came out and the people went, and the building was sold out. It wasn't a giant building, but it was probably almost 1,000 people and they sold the building out. And when he came out, the people had seen some great wrestling matches earlier. And when Hack came out, they exploded. And he walked down, he was pouring beers in people's mouths and they were pushing one another, get in line to have Hack pour the beer in their mouth. So he's still over.
Man, it's just crazy to think, like, okay, he's in WCW, but he's not the Sandman. He's hardcore Hack. You know what I mean? It's just funny. Obviously, legal reasons, and you can't own the Sandman name and Marvel and everything else, but just funny to think he's hardcore Hack.
Yeah. Well, he is hardcore Hack. I have to think of the world of him.
This isn't a bad match. Pretty entertaining for the most part. Hack does get the victory. After the match, Hugh Morris comes out, who's a part of the First Family, with Knobs, and they beat the crap out of Hack. they did the spike pile driver. They dumped the ladder onto him, and then Hugh Morris did the moonsault onto the ladder. So I guess the heels are getting some heat back, even though Hack got the victory.
Right. And it made sense. You know, that's, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. So it was good for Hack. Gave Brian a little bit of an out and elevated Hugh Morris, too.
So in the back, Buff. Oh, yes.
I was going to say, I think Kevin did a great way to start the show.
Oh, you like starting off with a hardcore match, maybe not a cruiserweight match.
I like not to fall into patterns, and I did fall into patterns. Know your limitations. And it was different than the regular way, a cruiserweight or a technical match, and I think it was a good way to break a pattern. Kevin was very smart. He's a guy that doesn't get his dues, how smart he is.
So Buff is in the back with Roddy Piper, thanking the WCW commissioner for giving him a match with Disco Inferno tonight. Obviously, Piper is the commissioner at this point. Then we go to the next match, Mikey Whipwreck versus Van Hammer. What do you think just about this one? As Van Hammer ends up getting the victory in about 8 minutes and 30 seconds. Not a great match here, but what do you think about this? Van Hammer getting a victory here in 1999.
I'm not sure. This is just my opinion. And again, I'm not sure. I'm not calling the shots. But you bring Mikey in. And Mikey was the underdog, the super underdog. He was the underdog cartoon. If Mikey had slipped over after getting his ass kicked, you got to remember, Mikey was a ECW original. I'm sure with him losing to Van Hammer, it pissed off a lot of ECW fans that bought that pay-per-view.
Just a weird thing with Hammer here, because he was kind of on a little bit of an undefeated streak. Were you guys actually thinking about giving a push in 99 to Van Hammer again?
I think there was some political undertones there. And Van Hammer had a very powerful friend. And I'm sure he helped get that match to go in Hammer's favor.
Who was he politically tied to?
Cage and him were very close.
Ah, makes sense. Okay. Just interesting to see, because it was almost like Van Hammer is going to get this little push, but then he's going to basically, because he did it with Wrath, and then he lost to Nash, and then he lost to Goldberg. It would be, it just seemed like almost like rinse and repeat. You know, the guy's not going to get a big push, but for some reason he goes on a winning streak.
Right.
The next matchup, the aforementioned Buff Bagwell defeats Disco Inferno in 10 minutes and 30 seconds. Actually, a pretty good match. Just a fun match. I really kind of enjoyed this one. I thought this was pretty good, Buff and Disco. I don't know, that surprised me because they're both good, but I wasn't expecting anything, and it was actually a good, fun match.
I don't think Disco gets his due. Do you?
Definitely not.
Yeah. Disco's a very talented guy. Very smart. And Buff is the stuff. So I could see why they would have a good match. And whether you like either one of them, they gave 100% when they went out there every time. So I'm not surprised the match was good and that you enjoyed it.
Yeah, good stuff there. So the next matchup, Conan and Rey Mysterio Jr., who are a part now of the No Limit Soldiers, defeated the West Texas Rednecks. Kurt Hennig and Bobby Duncombe Jr. match goes about 10 minutes. This was a pretty good match. I really kind of enjoyed this match. It's just funny seeing, you know, Conan and Rey are kind of tied into the No Limit Soldiers. So using the pop culture of Master P to try to maybe help Conan and Rey get over, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they fit into the No Limit Soldiers, especially Conan. you know, Conan's another guy that's very, very attuned to what's happening in the world. He's a very book smart guy, street smart guy, and nothing goes by him where he doesn't at least advance his thinking to stay current. I really have a lot of admiration for Conan.
The big security guard for Masterpiece, Swole, ended up cheating and helping Conan and Ray get the victory here. Did you guys want to use Swole like in more of a wrestling role, wrestling capacity? I mean, he was gigantic as far as just muscles on top of muscles.
That was the original plan, but I think something happened there. I'm not sure with contracts.
Interesting. So the next matchup, Ernest the Cat Miller with Sonny Ono, ends up defeating Horace Hogan in about 5 minutes. This is not a great one here, as Horace Hogan was replacing Scott Norton, who was not able to make the show. It felt like, I don't know, maybe there would have been something there with the Cat and Scott Norton, but the fill-in here for Horace Hogan just didn't work. Was not a good match.
Yeah, sometimes styles dictate a match. And I think they're both trying to perform to the other guy's strength and weaknesses. It just probably didn't come across the way they had envisioned it, or how Kevin envisioned it.
So the next match up, the match to determine the presidency of WCW, Rowdy Roddy Piper versus the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Flair's with Arn, and he's with Asia. Ric Flair ends up defeating Piper by DQ in about 8 minutes. I don't know, not that great here. Wasn't really feeling this one. It was okay, I guess, but just wasn't really feeling it. Just so much confusion as far as, like, creative, because Piper defeated Flair at Slamboree 99, so he takes the presidency from him. Piper fires Flair, but Flair's still technically the president. He's just not the commissioner. I mean, but then he is. It was very confusing at this point what was going on, because Flair would maintain being the president and Piper would then be the commissioner. So do you even, like, remember or can kind of keep up with, like, what was going on with just kind of, oh, president, oh, he's the commissioner, oh, he's going to fire this guy, oh, they're going to feud and he's going to beat him? It just, nothing seemed to mean anything.
I think Kevin had extended an olive branch to both Flair and Piper and let them come up with their own ideas. Because there was some animosity between the NWO and the established stars. So I think Kevin said, hey, whatever you guys want to do is okay with me. I'm just assuming that. It was just, you know, sometimes when you plan stuff and it's only for yourself, you forget the big picture and you can get it convoluted pretty quickly.
So Bagwell comes out, and I mentioned him earlier, not only versus Disco, but I mentioned he was in the back thanking Piper for the match. He actually comes out and tries to get involved because Arn is cheating. That's what causes the DQ, which causes Flair to win. And Piper is so mad at Buff for causing him to win, he then joins up with Flair and Arn, and all three of them beat up Buff. Does that make sense to you? That seems, I don't know, a little weird.
It's experienced guys trying to get out of nobody doing a job.
Interesting. But it's funny, like, after the match, they ignore that they've been feuding for the last few months. They ignore the match, and Piper is so mad that Bagwell cost him the match that he starts a feud with Bagwell. Do you like the way that's booked? It seems a little helter-skelter.
It seems that way to me. But again, it gets Kevin out of the middle of having to deal with people that maybe have a grudge. and you kind of bow down, not to Kevin Wood, but he understood he had enough heat with those guys that now's the time to try to mend everything. Kevin's a great politician, too. I don't understand why Kevin isn't in major company helping them.
Do you like Flair and Piper feuding in 1999?
I'm not sure of that. I mean, you know, they had feuded and become partners, I mean, you're going back to the well again. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like you said, it got so convoluted. It just didn't make sense to me.
So then up next, Rick Steiner defeated Sting in a false count anywhere match. Match goes about 10 minutes, 30 seconds. So Steiner at this point is the TV champion, but the title is not on the line, but it is a false count anywhere match. I don't know. Do you like, okay, Sting and Steiner are going to feud. Do you like how it's guy's the champion, but he's not defending the belt kind of thing? Is that weird?
To me, it's weird, but their thought process, I'm sure, was don't mean the title with a false count anywhere to build a match. There's still some old-time thinking, maybe. I don't mean to be old-time thinking, but trying to respect the belts, I'm not sure. But I'm not crazy about it like you are.
So Steiner gets the win, but does he? I mean, that's the question mark here, because they go, you know, it's false count anywhere. They start rolling the back. Tank Abbott then helps the Steiners, attacks Sting, goes to choke him out. And then this is where it gets a little weird. And a bunch of dogs, you could tell there's a cut there from the camera too, because it wasn't done smoothly. Then the hair has got 1,001 different camera shots, bing, bang, boom, of these dogs attacking Sting and beating up Sting. It's just like, what do you think about that? To me, you know, first of all, you get dizzy from watching it because of all the camera cuts, but I don't know, you got Scotty Steiner kind of interfering, you got Tank Abbott, and then all of a sudden a bunch of wild dogs. Weird.
Yeah. I can't say anything else, but what you said, very weird.
Can you defend it?
No. No.
You did not like that. I mean, the stuff with Nash and Savage, I kind of didn't like that either, but just, you know, because it's very sports entertaining. This was just weird. Like, they got a bunch of dogs, and the dogs eat Sting, the big hero. Like, pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So Ricky and Scott Steiner walk back to the ring, and Scott said that Rick had actually won by pinfall, and that it was too graphic to actually show on TV. The referee, who was Scott Dickinson, our buddy, reluctantly raised Rick Steiner's hand, and that's it. Your winner is Rick Steiner. It's kind of a weird way to win, too. Like, they don't actually show the pinfall. He just says that his brother won, and they give him the victory?
Some guys maybe outthink themselves.
I think so. Way too much going on.
Right.
So then we have
And dabbling a little too much in sports entertainment.
Oh, big time. Way too much. So then we have the Jersey Triad. DDP and Chris Kanyon, of course, with Bam Bam Bigelow to complete the triad, defeats Chris Benoit and Perry Saturn for the WCW World Tag Team Championship. The match goes 19 minutes, easily the best match on the card. This was great. I mean, I really, really liked this one. Post-match, the Jersey Triad would then beat up Malenko and celebrate with their new titles and kind of really almost set up a little bit of a six-man feud with Saturn, Benoit, and Malenko versus the Triad, DDP, Cannon, and Bigelow. But what do you think here of the Jersey Triad?
I liked how they did it. Very good. Very good.
Do do like that team, Page, Cannon, and Bigelow. Obviously, the Jersey Triad, old Jersey boys.
Very much. Everybody could work on that side. And on the other side, too. So they would have the best match of the card.
This is like, I know the Conan and Mysterio against the West Texas Rednecks was pretty good, too. But this was like a breath of fresh air here. I mean, after a bunch of really kind of really bad matches that left a lot of sour taste in the fans' mouth, this was pretty damn good.
Yeah, I mean, everybody there were masterful workers, so you couldn't expect anything less than what those guys gave.
But that being said, we have to talk about the main event, the World Heavyweight Championship match. The champion Kevin Nash defeats Randy Savage with Gorgeous George, Medusa, and Miss Madness by disqualification, retaining his title. And you know, obviously he would win the match. A match goes about 7 minutes, 30 seconds. This was not a good one, though. Savage looked not very mobile. He really could move. Nash looked like he may have been injured. He was very slow in this match. What do you think here? I mean, going to the well with Savage, but the guys, they just didn't deliver.
Randy might have had a couple of matches before this where he, you know, one of the things about Randy was he could really move. Now he's at, 50 pounds. It's going to slow anybody down. And Kevin was hurt at the time.
Yeah, very very disappointing. For the, I mean, just if you look, you know, like we always talk about the poster. If you look at the poster, wow, Nash and Macho Man. Like, wow, but no, just it just didn't work. Savage was maybe too big, too muscular. And obviously Nash, like I said, he was hurting. He was not too great. And, yeah, he really didn't have too many matches, like, before that, really, Savage, you know, in 99. He had, you know, a handful, but nothing, like, where it was a ton of matches.
Right. Right.
He had about 15 matches. Some on Thunder, some on Nitro. A lot of house show matches and stuff. So, you know, nothing crazy as far as just a huge workload, but it's like, wow, did he get himself into as good a shape given how big he was?
It's very hard to put on that weight that quick and keep your endurance up and your flexibility.
So the only kind of cool thing that happened here was Sid Vicious makes his return to WCW. He attacks Nash, you know, extracting a little bit of a revenge on Kevin Nash here, but he obviously would join Team Madness. Sid powerbombs Nash. He helps Savage to the back. The show ends. What do you think about Sid making his grand return here?
I've always liked Sid. I mean, Sid was a unique character. Definitely looked the part. And when his interviews were on, they were on. When they were off, they were off. But I really enjoyed watching Sid work.
Who was responsible for bringing him back?
Nash.
Their buds?
Yeah. And Kevin knew that Sid could draw money.
So it kind of, I don't know, it ends on a bad match, but it's kind of interesting because it got me interested because, like, wow, holy shit, Sid's back, you know? So you got another big name to kind of throw out there and really just, amplify WCW where he could be an impact player. You know what I mean? Like, Sid seems like he's that kind of guy.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. Now we get another monster. It's good.
I'm almost afraid to ask this question, but I have to. What did you think overall of the pay-per-view?
In the middle, headed down. Where would you put it?
Probably a thumbs down because the Sting thing with the dogs I hated. The Piper thing with Flair, it's like, okay, they're feuding, and then Buff interferes, and they all beat up Buff. Like, I don't know, that was weird. The finish, I hated the main event, just because I expected so much more out of Nash and Savage, but I did like the Sid part, and I did like a few of the tag matches, so probably thumbs down for me.
Okay. That's fair, for sure.
99 was weird, WWE. You had so much going on, just so much, like, I felt like it was in flux. You know what I mean? There was, like, after you guys were so strong with the NWO in 97 and 98 and even 96, but in 99 it was all over the place.
Yeah, we kind of lost direction, I believe. Not Kevin's fault. I think that there was so much disturbance in the company at the time.
Let's head towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Of course, you can follow Kevin on Instagram at Taskmaster Talks, and go to Pro Wrestling Tees, prowrestlingtees.com, and visit the Kevin Sullivan store. Kevin, what else you got going on?
Well, I'm going to L.A. tomorrow to do the territory of Honolulu for Vice, and I'm flying to Tampa for a signing. And then I'm going to be at PCW the following day. That Saturday, the following day, Sunday, I'll be at PCW for a signing. And then the following weekend, I'm in Jacksonville for the convention there, River Convention. So all our friends, come out and say hello to me.
Great stuff, as always. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks. All right, and we're out. Have a safe flight. Good luck out there. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.